Wow, man, what a week. New Intel chips, iTunes introduces prepaid purchasing for TV shows, and a look at the total cost of ownership of PCs. Okay, so maybe no pigs flew this week. But these stories are actually more interesting than you might think. Just wait till Jeff Gamet climbs into the context machine with me. I bet your little heart goes pitter-patter. Today is March 10th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. Oh, and before we get underway, hey, we're giving away an iPod Nano. This month, the Roundup is participating in a survey on podcasting habits. So I'm hoping that sometime this week you'll find a chance to run over the week's show notes. They're up at macobserver.com/roundup, as always. And just follow the link to the survey that's up there. It'll only take, seriously, about 60 seconds to fill the thing out, and it supports the show. We do have to pay the bills over here, and this info would really help us out. So the survey will run through the end of March. Go check it out. Great way to support the show. Next time you're idly surfing the net, just run over the show notes, check that out. Maybe win an iPod. Hey. Oh, and by the way, thanks to all of you for downloading this show each week. I'm having a great time here. I hope you are too. So, that's that. Let's get on with it. We're all over the map this week. Hey, just watch me for the changes. Try to keep up. To kick off its developer forum, Intel took the lid off of several new computer processors on Tuesday. Among them is the chip most likely to land in Apple's Pro desktop line, a dual-core processor named Conroe, which touts a 40% reduction in energy usage while gaining a 40% increase in computing horsepower. Conroe is scheduled to ship in volume sometime in the third quarter of 2006. Conroe is part of Intel's new professional business platform, codenamed Averill. The platform is an Intel-branded package that includes the CPU plus several other chips tailored to the needs of pro-level users. Three quad-core chips, codenamed Kentsfield, Clovertown, and Woodcrest, are also in the works. Woodcrest is expected to ship in the third quarter of this year, about the same time as Conroe. Does anyone else think that these sound more like names for suburban subdivisions than computer chipsets? Anyway, Apple announced on Monday that its annual Worldwide Developer Conference will start on August 7th, which is several weeks later than it's usually held, leading to speculation that the successor to the Power Mac G5 may be announced at the event. If true, it's reasonable to assume that the new Macs will be based on the Averill chipset. iTunes has a new prepay option for TV shows. For $10 up front, customers can purchase a program's next 16 episodes. Individually, the shows would cost a total of about $32 over time. The new option was introduced along with Comedy Central's Daily Show and Colbert Report, and it is not a subscription service. The distinction apparently confused several mainstream media outlets, which erroneously reported that Apple is joining the ranks of Napster and Real Networks. Those latter companies offer music subscription services, which charge a monthly fee in exchange for access to a vast library of music. Security awareness consultant Wynn Schwartau has compared the total cost of ownership of new Macs versus a comparable Windows PC. Total cost of ownership is a compilation of costs to purchase, set up, and maintain computers over a period, in the case of this study, of 3 years. His findings? The initial cost of a Mac may not be any more than a comparable PC, and the overall cost of the Mac will be significantly lower. If Wynn Schwartau's name sounds familiar to any of you, it's probably because he chronicled the experiences of his conversion of his security consulting business from Windows to Mac OS X. The 16-part series was called Mad as Hell, Switching to Mac. And BlackBerry owners sighed in relief late last week as Research in Motion announced that it settled a long-running patent dispute with NTP. Research in Motion announced that it agreed to pay NTP $612 million U.S., which covers all of NTP's claims, plus a perpetual license. As part of the settlement, NTP dropped its case against Research in Motion. NTP's lawsuit alleged that RIM violated patents it owned by developing and selling the BlackBerry and related services. Until the settlement was announced, BlackBerry owners were on edge wondering if Research in Motion might have to shut down its wireless email and its content delivery services. So these stories are all over the place, but we've got the man that wrote many of them this week. Joining me in the context machine, Mr. Jeff Gamet. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. It's good to be here.
Let's start talking about these new Intel processors. Intel announced a few different products, quite a few actually, last Tuesday. Which do you think are the most relevant to someone that wants to know what's coming up in Apple products?
Well, I think for most Mac users, the chip code named Conroe is the one people are going to care about. That's the one that's most likely to end up in the new pro-level Mac Tower, whatever that's going to be called. And that's going to be a nice dual-core chip that Intel says after the first of next year, at some point they'll introduce it as a quad-core chip, meaning it has four chip processors in it instead of two.
Now, there are these three, I believe, different quad-core chips. One is Kentsfield, another is Clovertown, and then there's this thing called Woodcrest. How much of this, I mean, there are a lot of code names. If you look at the article that we ran earlier this week, there are a lot of code names for these processors. Are they really substantially different products, or are they pretty much all the same thing with different names?
They are different products, and actually the whole code name thing, this is going to take the average Mac user a little while to get used to, because there's a lot of code names that come out of Intel. But some of the other products, like the Woodcrest processor and I believe the Clovertown also, those are going to be geared more towards the server end. Just like, I'm already forgetting one of the names, Samoa. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I can't even remember the name of it now. But, that chip is most likely going to end up in the X-Serve, at least that's my guess. And the nice thing about a lot of those chips is that they're going to be socket swappable, meaning you can take one chip when you buy the product, and then later on, when a newer, more powerful version of that processor comes out, you pop your old one out, put the new one in, and it's like getting a whole computer upgrade.
And I imagine that will be a welcome relief to a lot of people using Apple servers. Apple, in many ways, is notorious for making it difficult to upgrade particularly little important but small components of a computer like the processor.
Yes, and they've even gone so far in the past as to make a product that appears to be upgradable by the user, and no upgrades ever come out.
Apple also appears to be very good, has always been very good at reducing the number of sort of branded terms that it applies to its products. For example, we get Core Duo, Core Solo. There's not a lot of information about the processor that's in there. They just give sort of one word or two words that you can attach to the name of the product. Is it reasonable to expect, should we expect that all of these various code names for Intel products will end up being the branded names that Apple uses in its products?
Actually, I think that the code names we're seeing now will go away. And the same thing happened with the Core Duo processor. It had a different code name before it was publicly available. So I'm pretty sure we'll see the same thing happen here, which will be nice because it's really difficult to keep track of all these different processors that we might be dealing with just based on what appears to be random words.
And as I said earlier in the show, it sounds a lot more like suburban subdivision names than computer chipsets, right? Like Kentsfield,
yes.
Clovertown. So let's talk a little bit more about Apple. Apple's developer conference is in early August, which is about a month and a half later than usual. Yes. So the conventional wisdom is that we'll see these processors, some new processors or some new Power Mac in August. Is that speculation reasonable?
I think it's totally reasonable. That's about the same time frame that the new chips from Intel should be hitting the market. And I think Apple may have moved the developers' conference to coincide with that, so they can either announce or actually officially release a new pro-level Mac.
There's another thing about WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference. That's where we usually see the upcoming release of Mac OS X. And the last time around, Apple was saying, we're not going to focus on the next release. We're going to talk about Tiger. This was now last June that they were doing this. And they said, we're going to slow down our release cycle for OS X. It's becoming a more mature operating system. But we should, we're pretty much expecting to see a discussion of the next iteration of OS X, which I believe is called Leopard.
Right.
And people generally seem happy with OS X Tiger, the current version. What's to improve about the operating system? What might we be seeing in WWDC to improve the operating system?
The thing I hope we see is an improvement to Spotlight. Now, Spotlight is a great technology, and it has incredible potential and power. The problem is the interface is broken. It's not easy to effectively use, at least for the average person. So I hope we see some updates to that. Now, as far as other changes we might see, improvements, I think we're going to see some changes that make OS X even easier to use as a communication device, and not just to say people talking to each other through the internet or using iChat, but as a device that can communicate with other devices even easier. So it'll be easier to exchange information and keep all of the documents and other things that you need to use all the time up to date and consistent regardless of where you go.
So it sounds like you're also talking about working, for example, across multiple computers. You've got one in your house, one in your office, a laptop, and you want to make sure that they all have the same information.
Exactly. Now, keep in mind that my crystal ball for Apple's future is broken. So I'm just
guessing. Like Spotlight's interface.
Exactly.
So while we're talking about Apple, there's another story, this one about iTunes, which introduced a new payment option for TV shows, this prepay option, which they're calling MultiPass. So first of all, what's your take on this? Is this a good idea, this new pricing structure?
I think it's a great idea. The whole thing behind MultiPass is that you can, in essence, buy a show in bulk. And think of it like going to the grocery store. You can buy a single can of soda pop, and it'll cost you a certain price. But if you buy a six-pack, it costs you less per can. And that's pretty much what Apple is doing here.
Now, at the same time, if you compare the numbers, you know, you buy 16 shows for $10 versus if you bought them all separately, it'd be over $30. And that seems like a pretty good deal. The natural reaction, of course, from people that post online and many reactions are, why would I ever pay even $10 if I can see it for free on TV? There's clearly a move here to try and look for clever ways to entice people to pay money for television that they could just watch on their own time. So it's certainly a good idea when you compare, you know, $30 versus $10. How do you think this stacks up as $10 versus free?
The people that are looking for free programming only, they're probably not going to buy something from the iTunes Music Store anyhow. And they're probably also the same people that are saying, why would I go out and buy the boxed set of my favorite show if I can watch it for free on TV instead? And I think that's where a lot of people are coming from. Now, when you look at the people that are on the fence, where they're saying, okay, well, maybe I'll buy something, but geez, I just don't know if I like the price. All right, if you offer someone $10 for 16 episodes, now it's a much more enticing offer. And I think that will bring some more people into the iTunes fold, so to speak. And for those people that are already in the fold, I think this is likely to increase sales.
And it's also worth pointing out, I suppose, that the big issue here is sort of freedom to use that stuff. You own the show. You can watch it whenever you want to. You can watch it on the bus, which, of course, you can't do if you want to watch it for free on TV. And that matters here as well.
Yes, it does. And it actually, that brings up an interesting point. I've noticed that a lot of other news sites are reporting that Apple has started a subscription service. And MultiPass is definitely not a subscription service. It's merely a bulk discount for the shows you're already going to buy.
Now, if I were to read one thing out of this move, the decision to introduce MultiPass, it's that Apple is willing to experiment with its pricing structure, that it's not completely wedded to selling things one by one and selling them at this price. Do you think, first of all, that that's true, that Apple might be a little bit more flexible than people had thought in its pricing structure?
I think they do have some flexibility. And you've seen that a little bit in the past, where you'll have, say, an album that costs a certain price per song, everything's 99 cents, but then when you look at the total album price, it's higher than $9.99, which is what Apple was saying albums would cost. So we've already seen that to a degree. This really isn't any different. I think it's just another avenue they're looking at to enhance sales.
And do you think that there's any chance that we might see additional experimentation or additional ideas for how to price music going forward at the iTunes Music Store specifically?
I think that's possible. Now, I don't think it would be in the form of the latest song from your favorite band is going to cost you more, the sliding scale that a lot of the recording labels want Apple to go to. I would venture to say it would be more along the lines of you can buy the 99-cent version of the song, or for $1.25, you can buy the high-definition version.
All right, so let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about one of these other stories this week. I was very interested to see this spreadsheet come out from Wynn Schwartau on total cost of ownership. There's, in the years that I've been watching coverage of the Mac and listening to people who believe that the Mac is a superior platform, try and convince other people, one of the most common arguments has always been total cost of ownership. It's cheaper in the long run to own a Mac based on the maintenance of the machine and so forth. But this is one of the first things I've seen where someone attempted to really do that quantitatively. So first of all, have you used this spreadsheet at all? Do you have any idea how accurate it is or how valuable it is?
I've played with it some, and actually I think it's really great that Wynn took the time to do this, because there's been so many reports that you can find on the internet and other locations that tell you, yes, owning a Mac in the long run is always cheaper than owning a comparable Windows PC, but there really hasn't been anything that makes it easy for someone to say, well, yeah, but what about in my case? And that's exactly what this does. So the little bit that I've been playing around with it, I found that it can yield some very interesting results, where the comparison you get between costs on a Mac and a PC over a certain period of time becomes very dramatic. That difference becomes very dramatic.
Every single time. So you've never been able to rig it somehow so that you end up with a PC that's more expensive than a Mac.
So, well, the PC always ends up, in the long run, being more expensive than the Mac.
But I'm sorry, I actually meant cheaper there, didn't I? Is there any way to rig it so that the PC ends up being cheaper?
You were testing me, weren't you? So, I have not played with it enough to make the PC cheaper than the Mac. I'm sure you could do it. Putting in numbers that are real world, the Mac always ended up being cheaper. Now, of course, there's nothing to stop you from going in and changing the equations in the spreadsheet to suit your needs. And who knows, maybe some IT department that really wants Windows machines will do that somewhere. Okay, I'm just kidding on that. But but still, when I was putting in realistic, honest numbers, I was always getting back a less expensive Mac.
That's really interesting. And do you have any idea what some of the mathematical machinery behind this is? I mean, have you looked at it enough to know whether or not you trust some of the assumptions that he's making in the background of the spreadsheet?
Yes. And actually, he includes a nice document that explains what he's doing and how to use the spreadsheet. And so when you see how he details everything out, it makes sense. So I think he put a lot of thought into how to build the spreadsheet.
Great. So I was going to talk a little bit about Research in Motion and the fact that they settled this lawsuit, but just as we were sitting down to talk, you told me that today, and we're recording this on Thursday, today Microsoft just announced Origami. I haven't talked about that in the previous news bits. Can you just give us a quick summary of, first of all, what Origami is?
Okay, I'll start with what everyone thought it would be, and then go into what it is. Microsoft tried Apple's tactic of building up hype around a product, in this case Origami, and the little bits of information that were available made it appear as if this might be a really cool portable computer entertainment system that could compete with tablet PCs and Sony PlayStation portables and the iPod. And in reality, what it's turned out to be is just a shrunk down tablet PC.
Now, for our listeners who may not know exactly what the Windows tablet PC is, what would differentiate the Windows tablet PC, for example, from the PlayStation Portable?
That's a good question. Okay, a tablet PC is, in essence, the computer display with the computer tucked in behind it somewhere. There's no keyboard. It's like holding, in essence, a sheet of paper, although a lot thicker, and it's running Windows. You have the stylus that you would normally use, say with a Palm PDA, and you use that as an input device. You can connect other regular computer peripherals to it and use it as a regular computer, but it's designed to be far more portable than a laptop. And then the Origami, which is now taking on the very exciting name of Ultra Mobile Personal Computer. Very exciting. That's now a tablet PC type device that's been shrunk down to more of a hardback book size. I'm most disappointed because I had the chance to see the leaked video that was available, I think, a week or two ago. And it showed the concept of what Origami was going to be, which was a little computer that could link up to your desktop machine, interact with it. It would become, in essence, a satellite of your desktop computer. When you're at home or at your office, you could use it to do all the things you would normally do as if you're at your computer. You take it out of the office, and now it becomes a slimmed-down version of that. You still have your files, but you have applications that have been minimalized to do the things you would need to do on the road. And wireless capabilities, just all these great things. And then the final product, it doesn't look as good as the mock-ups, and it doesn't have a lot of the functionality that this prototype video showed.
Now, one of the other critical questions here, if you've looked over this product and the difference from what the hype was and understand what some of the other products out there are, can you talk a little bit about how you think this product will do in the marketplace?
I think that it will do really well in very specific niches in the market, just like the tablet PC does. But for an overall market product, I don't think it's going to be a phenomenal device that just takes over like the iPod has. I think it'll just stick in niche areas where people need to have something that's more powerful than, say, a Palm or one of the HP PDAs. They need to have a bigger screen and more horsepower to do whatever their job is, whether it's inventory control or something that requires more than just a PDA can do, but you don't want to carry around a full laptop.
So, in other words, this is not a tablet PC killer. It's not an iPod killer. It's not a PlayStation Portable killer. It's just a new and interesting kind of niche product.
Exactly.
Fair enough. And that's going to have to be the final word. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me on again.
As always, if you have thoughts or questions about the news, you can send them to me at roundup@macobserver.com. Let's do the product roundup. Jumsoft on Tuesday released the final version of Process 2, an update to the outlining and project management software that offers several new features, including smart projects, which are similar to iTunes' smart playlists. Upgrades from version 1 are $20 US, while the full software is $40. Family and business packs are also available. iOGear announced the immediate availability of the MiniView, a new keyboard video mouse switch that fits under Apple's Mac Mini. The new KVM switch lets up to 4 computers share the same input devices and monitor and can connect to any HD TV with a standard VGA connector. It costs $130. Crucial Technology on Wednesday introduced its new Gizmo Overdrive, a line of flash drives that read and write data at more than twice the speed of its original Gizmo drives. The new drives come in white or black, with storage ranging from 512 megabytes to 2 gigabytes, starting at $50. Caladia announced the immediate availability of Postino on Tuesday. Postino is an RSS newsreader application that lets you organize your news feeds into groups and smart lists, auto-discover RSS feeds, bookmark articles for later reference, and search for feeds based on keywords. Postino is available for download for $30. I'm sorry, that's $25 US. The iPod MAME project has succeeded in putting the arcade game emulator MAME on an iPod, along with working ROMs for Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, and Pengo. The software works with an iPod Video and iPod Nano, but hasn't been confirmed to run on other color screen iPods. Also this week, Misha Sakularopoulou reviews two premium-priced iPod bookshelf stereos, the Bose SoundDock and Apple's iPod Hi-Fi. Guess which one comes out on top? Oh, wait, surprise, it's neither. This week, Misha also reviewed Belkin's surprisingly good TuneBase FM for the iPod Nano. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the weekly roundup. This show is being recorded early because I'm traveling next week. For the same reason, next week's show will go up a day or so later than usual, around the end of the weekend. Just letting you know so that no one freaks out. Thanks to those of you writing reviews at Podcast Alley and over at iTunes. And remember, run over to the show notes, follow that link to the listener survey, and maybe you'll win an iPod Nano. And of course, my everlasting appreciation. As always, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. For TMO. Good night, everyone. It's been a lousy week, but it's over. Glory be! Stay subscribed, and until next week, I'll see you online. Oh, wait, no, I won't. I'll be on vacation. Oh!